Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, I'm Josh Hallam, and you are listening to Just Films and That. This is the podcast where we celebrate films that we think are underrated, underseen, or we perhaps just wanted to talk about them. This week's film is The Whole Nine Yards, so let's see what we think. Alice.
Yes, Josh.
The Whole Nine Yards.
The Whole Nine Yards. All nine of them.
The ninth film in the Yards whole trilogy. No, not trilogy. Indeed. That doesn't make any sense.
The nonology? What's the
The whole Yards cinematic universe.
So if you haven't seen 1 through 8, guys, just go away. Watch all those films.
We're joking. It's just one film with it. There is a sequel, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about The Whole Nine Yards, and there will be spoilers if you've not seen it. So,
indeed,
you know, go and watch it and then see what we think or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, Alice, you pick this one.
Mm-hmm.
So The Whole Nine Yards, Alice.
Okay.
What is The Whole Nine Yards about, Alice? And why did you pick The Whole Nine Yards, Alice?
So The Whole Nine Yards is a comedy crime film starring Matthew Perry and Bruce Willis. So Matthew Perry stars as Oz, who is a dentist who lives in Quebec, who is in what looks like a very unhappy marriage with his wife. Bruce Willis plays Jimmy Tudesky, or Jimmy the Tulip, a famous hitman who moves in next door after getting out of prison. There is a bounty on his head, and Oz's wife tells Oz to go and collect it, but Oz doesn't really want to do that because he quite likes Jimmy. Then Jimmy finds out about the whole thing, but he isn't mad at Oz because he's got a man on the inside who knows what's actually going on. We then find out that Oz's wife had actually hired a different contract killer previously to kill Oz so she could get his life insurance money. This failed because the contractor, Jill, who is Oz's dental assistant, started to like Oz too much. So we follow this as it all unravels. There's contract killers, killing gangsters and cops. Oz falls in love with Jimmy's wife, Cynthia. Jill and Jimmy then fall in love, and they all live happily ever after. The reason I picked it, so I did think perhaps it was a little bit underrated. It's also a little bit of a revisit for me. So I'd seen the film when I was younger. I knew I liked it. Pretty sure I had it on VHS. But I actually couldn't remember anything about it. Like, I couldn't remember what it was about at all. But I just remembered that I did like it. So I was like, right, well, I need to go and rewatch this, see if I like it. Looked at the critical reception online. I was like, I think that's a little bit low. So I think maybe The Whole Nine Yards might be a bit underrated. So when it's a bit underrated, bit revisiting. What about you, Josh? Had you seen The Whole Nine Yards? Had you heard of The Whole Nine Yards?
I had not seen The Whole Nine Yards. Ooh. I had heard of The Whole Nine Yards. But other than knowing who was in it, in terms of Matthew Perry and Bruce Willis, that is all I knew. I didn't know anything about it going in. Not a jot.
Oh, cool. All right then. So what did you think?
So, I really wanted to like this.
You wanted to like it. Okay.
I saw the cast and I was like, it's definitely going to be good, this.
Yeah, a bit of me, that. A bit of Brucey, a bit of Matt.
It left me a bit, if I'm honest, a bit meh.
Okay.
Overall. Yeah. Now, I've got stuff I liked about it.
Okay, good.
I'm not going to absolutely lay into it, but I will be honest, the whole thing left me a bit meh.
Left wanting a few more yards.
I think it couldn't cash the check that the plot promised that it could.
All right then.
And the cast as well. But there's stuff I liked about it, so let's get stuck into that.
Great.
So you revisited this. Mm-hmm. You liked it when you were a kid.
I did.
And you watched it on VHS and your dad probably had it under Yards.
Yeah, probably just Yards. Yeah.
Shards.
But so Chandler from Friends is taken on by
John McClane and Chandler in crime film. What did you think then, having watched it again? Did it live up to your memory? Because the thing is you didn't really have a memory, did you? You just remembered that you liked it.
I just remembered that I liked it. I guess it was a little bit similar, like with All Dogs Go to Heaven. Like,
yeah.
I maybe couldn't quite remember the exact plot points and the exact narrative, but I knew that I had a feeling towards it.
I was a bit like that when we did Casper, when you picked Casper. Oh, I just remember thinking, I remember enjoying that. Because the other one that we've never done, and I don't know if we'll ever do, was I always remember being at, like, I don't know, a babysitter's house or a childbinder's house or a friend's house or something like that, and watching The Flintstones.
Oh, yeah.
The John Goodman one.
Yeah.
And just
yeah.
being, and like, I bet if we watch that now, I bet it's shit.
Yeah.
but I, like, when you're a kid, and this is what I suppose this is what we talk about, which is it's maybe not for you. You know, a live action Flintstones adaptation isn't necessary for you.
But you can still appreciate and you enjoyed it at the time.
So you remembered that you liked it. So what did you like having watched it with a more critical eye?
So overall, right, I actually really liked it. Like, I had a really good time and I think I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I was a bit nervous, had some reservations. I was like, oh my God, is this going to be rubbish? Is it going to be outdated? Was this just, you know, I was young, naive or whatever, and, you know, liked it for those reasons. But I actually really enjoyed it. So I quite like the concept. So scary hitman moves in next door and shenanigans ensue, right? Oz is pretty miserable and pretty bored. He's wanting something to happen. And so it does happen. And I quite like that at the beginning of the film, you don't really know what it's going to be about. Like, is it going to be a rom-com? Is it a family drama? Is it a social thriller? Like, it's not the most complex story or script ever, but I do think it keeps you guessing. And I do think it's pretty funny at times, and you've got some good physical gags in there, some low-key, sarcastic, deadpan humour as well, I thought. I think Bruce Willis and Matthew Perry work really well together. So, I mean, Matthew Perry is just pretty much being Chandler, but he gives a pretty decent physical performance. Like, he's always dramatically bumping into stuff or falling over things in quite a slapstick way.
A bit
Jim Carrey-esque at times, I thought. He's really jumpy as well. And you've got all this alongside Bruce Willis's cool, calm, collected, but dangerous. And I think they complement each other really well. There's a moment where Oz is sort of ambushed by Jimmy in a hotel room and he turns around to run away, but he just full on body smashes into one of Jimmy's henchmen. And then just bouncing off that as well, I completely forgot that Michael Clark Duncan was in this. So he plays Frankie
Legend.
Figgs, one of Jimmy's close friends. He's brilliant. I also think Kevin Pollak, who plays crime boss Yanni Gogolak, is really good as well. He brings a lot of little touches to his character, like the way he pronounces certain words and his gestures and his movements and stuff. And I actually found really entertaining.
Okay. So I would echo a lot of what you've said there.
Great.
So, like, I
good
do
start.
Think I in bits of it, I think. So I think Matthew Perry is really, really good in this. I think he's really good as the sort of, because he is, I'm not that familiar with Friends. I've not watched lots of it.
Oh, you're not,
it,
are you?
But I know the character of Chandler. I know what his shtick is and all that sort of stuff. And I do know what you mean. Except in this, he's a bit more of a straight man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he does that straight man in over his head really, really well. There are points when he almost feels like he's the only actor who sort of is trying in this.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Which I'll come back to. He does do some excellent slapstick. And as I say, he does that in over his head thing, straight man, you know, normal guy in a world he doesn't understand really, really well, I think, in this. He gets more manic as the film goes on and more crazy stuff happens. And I do think he carries the film quite well.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good bits of slapstick, as I've said. There's some good bits of darker comedy towards the end. The flip side of that is I'll come on to later on. It does feel like what they were trying to go for was an old school, star-driven caper crime comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the sort of thing you'd look back and see like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin in, or something like that in the 60s. So there's some good bits in it in that sense. I do think that there's some good moments as well. So there's a bit where he realizes who Bruce Willis is.
Yes.
And you get this moment where he remembers all the news headlines and media coverage.
The newspaper, like,
of
montage
being,
bits. Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting choice.
I thought that was really good.
I'd never seen a film set in Quebec before. So
no, yeah,
really,
neither.
You've got that really interesting mix because it's obviously French-speaking and American, well, English-speaking Canadian city, isn't it? And is it a city or is it definitely a city, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I thought so, yeah.
As in, I don't mean like, is it a village? I mean like...
or is it like a province
remember, I couldn't remember if it was a province, or something like that. But anyway, so you've got some really good like shots of a sort of a lesser seen skyline, you know?
Yes.
We've seen New York, we've seen San Francisco, we've seen Chicago.
Yeah, or London.
And a lot of Chicago is in this, but you get some really good bits of Quebec. And I thought that was quite interesting. Yeah. There's some interesting... I don't even know if I liked it. There's some interesting music in it.
Yes, like, let's talk about like, the music.
Yeah,
go on.
What did you think of the music?
I loved it, right? So I really like the score and the soundtrack.
It's a bit out there, isn't it?
It is a bit out there. And yeah. I feel like I've been quite harsh recently on films, soundtracks and scores.
Passengers,
I know I slagged off Passengers a bit and Bruce Almighty. But there was a real jazz feel to this in a lot of the music. There was a lot of wind instruments and at times it was sexy, at times it was dangerous. And I thought it was really good and used really well.
Yeah, no, I agree, sir. I agree. Some of it was a bit, I think because you're not used to it. So if you look at the two films you just mentioned there, Passengers and Bruce Almighty,
mm-hmm.
I think the score, I disagree with Passengers,
mm-hmm.
but I know what you mean with Bruce Almighty, which is the score is something that you're almost so used to that it's there to show you when to feel emotional, a bit like a laugh track in a sitcom.
Yeah.
So for me, I almost just didn't notice it.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas this, because I think they made some quite brave choices, I did notice it. And there were some bits where, I don't even know if I disliked or liked it, I noticed it. I was like, that's a weird choice.
Yeah.
I've not heard that before.
Yeah.
I've not heard that before. But you do associate jazz with, like, Quebec and Montreal, don't you? Because there is a sort of a bit of a jazz culture, I think, in those cities. I've definitely seen it in other films.
Okay.
I've definitely seen it in other films.
When we do go into a jazz bar a couple of times,
yeah. And I think, is it Bruce Willis's character likes jazz? Does he listen to jazz at one point? Or one of them's listening to jazz at one point? But anyway, I thought there were some interesting choices in the music. For me, the highlight, so there are some good performances in it. Matthew Perry, but the highlight for me is the two ladies who are in it. I can't remember the blonde lady's name, but I think Amanda Pete, who plays, what's the character called? Jill.
Jill is the assistant, and then Cynthia is Jimmy's wife.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So Amanda Pete, who plays Jill, I think she is the beating heart and emotional sort of centre of this film. Mm-hmm. I think she's quite underrated as a performer. I know that she hasn't done loads of leading stuff, but she does a lot of character roles or supporting roles. She's in a couple of films that, like, we did one before you came on board called Away We Go. That's worth... Is it Away We Go? No. No. You know what she's in? The Way, Way Back. She's in The Way, Way Back.
Is she?
She plays the character who Steve Carell's cheating on Toni Collette with.
Oh, God, does
and
she?
She's always really good in stuff. She's always like... I've never seen her give a bad performance. She seems to be able to do a bit of everything. Mm. And her story arc in this...
Oh, it's good, isn't it?
I thought was the most interesting part of the film.
Yeah, it's good. It's funny.
So, for me, the film really comes... Again, spoilers, I know, it's a 20-odd-year-old film. You've probably seen it if you're listening to this. But, so it turns out, as Alice said when she was introducing the film, that she is... You think she's just Matthew Perry's assistant, and they seem to be really friendly, and she's always encouraging him to get out of his marriage because he's so unhappy and all that sort of stuff. But it turns out that actually his wife hired her to kill him because she really wants to be a contract killer. He was the first hire she ever got, and then... She couldn't go through killing him because she liked him too much. But she idolises Bruce Willis's character, which then becomes like a romantic attachment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that reveal doesn't come in until, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes?
Yeah, quite
an
into,
hour, something
quite
like
late
that.
Into
it's
the
it's
film,
halfway
yeah.
through, isn't it? Something like that. But that, for me, I wasn't really enjoying the film that much. I was like, I don't really know I don't really know what I'm feeling about this. And that came into it, I was like, that's good. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's a nice
like
little
really,
twist.
It's a nice little story arc. And I could have done with more of it, if I'm honest. And I think even though they give her a story arc, I still think she's a little bit underused.
Yeah.
Because she gives a real, like, a real energy to that character. And when the twist comes into it, it adds another layer of stakes and another layer of tempo to the story, which was a bit bog standard until then. And she is so likable in this role, I think, that I think you really root for that character. But I could have done with more of her, or I could have done with... I could have done with more of her. But I think she's brilliant in this. I mean, what have you got anything about that? What do you think about that?
I mean, that was one of my favourite sort of narrative points throughout. Mm. And it's, like I said at the beginning, I suppose where I quite enjoyed that you didn't quite know where it was going to go and you didn't really know what the point of anything was... You probably didn't enjoy that as much and it sort of left you wondering a little bit. But yeah, when that happened, because it's interesting because it's like a save the cat moment that happens off screen. Like when you find out, oh, she actually had the opportunity to kill to kill Oz, to kill Matthew Perry's character for money, and she didn't do it. So even though we don't see that, it makes you like her a bit more. And all this stuff that she's saying about, oh, you need to leave your wife, you know, you're obviously in an unhappy relationship. Like, at first that might seem quite, oh, well, who are you? Like yeah. how close are you to him? But it's like, oh no, she has the facts that his wife wants him dead for money. Yeah. Like, she knows that information. Yeah. So she is an authority to say, you need to leave that marriage now. But yeah, I really enjoyed it as a plot point.
Yeah, and it adds another layer of value and jeopardy to the whole character arc. But what else? So, you obviously have a real affection for this film that goes back to, do you think a lot of it was nostalgia, or did you find stuff that you really, really liked again as an adult?
I think it was just kind of, it was quite low stakes. Like, it was quite easygoing. And I think because my expectations weren't necessarily low, but I just didn't, like, I just couldn't remember any of the plot points or anything. And then it wasn't until, like, Bruce Willis's character moves in next door and I was like, oh, yeah. And then it sort of all started coming back to me. But I just really enjoyed it and I had a lot of fun watching it. Something that I did notice this time around, so there's a lot of flies buzzing around in this film. So usually buzzing around certain characters' heads, including Oz. But I don't really know what this means. So I was like, could this be to indicate that Oz's wife has put a hit out on him and it's like, death is just around the corner? Like, I don't know. I was searching for it. And then also another thing was that there was a lot of no smoking signs in this film, but every fucker was smoking. Like, everyone except Oz pretty much was smoking. So again, I was like, what does this mean? But I don't really know what it meant. Do you know what it meant, Josh? What were they trying to convey with that?
Maybe it's just meant to show a disregard for rules. I don't know. Like,
yeah, maybe.
I'm not too sure.
And obviously, because he's a dentist.
This is pre-smoking ban. Well, this is in Canada, so I don't know.
Yeah, not sure when it came. It would have been just before for us. Did the smoking ban come in here
seven
about
2002? Or eight, something like that.
Oh, was it that late, was it?
So it was...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh, I can't remember. It was within 10 years of this.
Right, yeah. I don't know. So, you know, was there a lot more going on under the surface that maybe I just couldn't quite understand? I don't know.
And smoke gets rid of flies. So if they were all allowed to smoke, there might not be so many flies.
Oh, maybe. Maybe the two are connected. Josh, you are a mind and a half. I tell
Analysis.
You.
That's what we're here for. Okay, so let's move on then to talking about things that we perhaps didn't like or that we might change about the film. Now, you said you liked this when you were younger. You watched it again. You still like it. But you weren't gushing with praise. You weren't effusive.
I have gushed harder.
So you have. So what would you change about it? Or was there anything you watched that was like, I don't remember that, or that's disappointing? Or is it just all pretty positive for you?
No, so there were a couple of things. So technically, there were a few dodgy cuts in there. So I feel like more attention could have been paid to the continuity editing. Like when we were cutting from one shot to the next, the character's positioning or placement would feel a little bit off. Mm. And I always feel like that does cheapen a film, like when those sort of mistakes have been made. And because we are reading the film in such a way, I'm going to notice it. Like I will notice that sort of thing. So that was a bit of a shame. I do find it a bit crazy that Oz falls in love with Cynthia, so Jimmy's wife, after 24 hours.
Yes.
And then proposes to her as well.
That's in my notes.
It's a bit... Yeah,
he fancies her.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, it's a bit wacky.
That's why I've got a wider point on this. But yeah, he just sees her, fancies her, and then within days, they're engaged.
I think a day. Like, I think the whole thing is pretty much over 24 hours. He's, like, telling her that he loves her and that he wants to marry her. And for me, that sort of makes him come across as more shallow than perhaps I felt like he was at the beginning. Because he's obviously at the beginning, you know, he's all like, oh, I'm complaining about my wife. I'm unhappily married. But because we do actually find out, oh, no, his wife is a bit of a terrible person and does want him dead. So that's all justified. So then when this all happens with Cynthia, it just makes him so much more two-dimensional, which I think is a bit of a shame. But what was your wider point on this? What did you note?
So my wider point, and I'll come back to it if you've got anything else to say later on, which is that I think that the big issue for me with this was that it almost couldn't decide what it wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, it wants to be a sort of caper, screwball comedy with a bit more of an ensemble cast. And in that sense, it reminded me of something like Rat Race.
Mm-hmm.
Really simple plot. Actors sort of acting in a more melodramatic way, owning the screen, chewing the scenery. And in that sense, if you cartoon it up a little bit like Rat Race does, then I think some of the choices of the characters make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, there's bits in Rat Race that are like, you would never act like that.
It's such a weird way.
But because
it's
of the way it's delivered
as all
to you,
hell, isn't it?
It's like it's like you're watching the Wacky Races, or it's like you're watching Tom and Jerry or something like that. And by presenting it to you in this cartoony way, I didn't find myself, I can understand if it's not your thing, it's not your thing, but I didn't find myself when we talked about Rat Race questioning the choices of the characters.
Yeah,
because they all make really stupid choices in incredibly unrealistic scenarios, right? But on the other hand, this is sort of trying to be maybe like a dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it doesn't pitch its tent or hitch to either wagon. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't decide. And so for me, because it didn't pick one, it didn't make sense. If it was a goofball comedy or a caper movie, Oz falling in love with Cynthia, then getting engaged straight away almost makes sense, because mm-hmm. that idea of like Cupid's arrow hits, it makes sense. Like, so if you think like in Rat Race, there are characters that meet and like fall in love straight away, but almost doesn't feel like it fits in the world of the film. And then there's other things that I started noticing, like why are Matthew Perry and his wife together?
Yeah.
Unless it's something to do with divorce law in Canada. I don't know, I'm not a legal expert. But but this just seems to be like, he just doesn't have the balls to leave her and that's it. And then other stuff like, there's some really weird product placement choices in it. Like there's really obvious bits where characters are drinking Pepsi or Miller Genuine Draft. And it's literally it's like fucking Wayne's World.
Yeah,
it's so obvious. And then there's another bit where to distract some guys who are attacking them, Amanda Peet walks out naked, mm-hmm. right? Again, so for me, she doesn't need to be naked. She could just be in her underwear.
Yeah.
It's not...
Yeah, I thought that. When I see her fully nude, I was like, ooh.
Yeah. It's a bit gratuitous to me. I think it's a little bit indicative of the time that this was made.
Mm-hmm.
If it was more of the caper comedy, more of the goofball comedy, I could, considering the time, maybe think, well, that's why he's topless.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't. I still think whatever it was, it's probably a little bit gratuitous. But because I was like, you know, undecided on what genre or what type of comedy it wanted to be, it left me questioning it.
Mm.
So it left me going, I don't understand what this is. I don't understand what
muddled,
this wants to
isn't
be.
It? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it could have been that like star driven caper comedy,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't, because the other thing they do is that there's some real disparity in the performance styles of some of the actors. So like Matthew Perry, straight man, does a bit of slapstick. But then you've got Rosanna Arquette, doing the most cartoony French accent.
Mm.
And then I know you said like you liked Kevin Pollak's performance. I didn't mind his performance apart from one another, which is he seemed to be doing a weird affectation with his voice where, so they're on about the Hungarian mob.
Mm.
And it sort of seems to be that he's speaking English with a Hungarian accent and he can't say his R's, so he says W's.
Mm. And when he's, instead of his J's, he says yeah, like he calls him Yimmy, doesn't he, instead of Jimmy.
Except he's just using an American accent.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't he be able to say those letters? So again, if they'd have gone, you're Hungarian, do cartoonish Hungarian accent, then I'd have been like, oh, I get that. But then on the other hand, you've got Bruce Willis, who is incredibly cool. He's such a cool actor. You know, he's the king of some of that sort of like laid back guy, you know, action hero sort of thing in films, isn't he? But he's really playing it quite low key. Like he seems like he's, it's like Bruce Willis's character is from the dark comedy and a lot of other people are from the screwball comedy.
Yeah,
and
I totally see what you mean.
And they don't really match up. And it just left me going like, and I think for me, it probably comes down to a mixture of the writing and the directing, which is like, just pick one. Pick one. Because if you'd have gone with the lighter option, for me, it could have been a really good film. Mm-hmm. But there's some elements in it. It's like, it's all a bit jarring. So like, as I say, the difference between some of the performances, if you look at Rosanna Arquette's performance and Bruce Willis's performance, if you showed them to two people and went, they're from the same film, you'd be like, what is going on? So I think the director and the writer, might be the same person, I can't remember, I haven't checked, needed to make a decision about that. And if they had done, either they need to get Bruce Willis and be like, you know, energy up, high up.
Yeah, up it a little bit, yeah.
Or everyone else, bring it down to Bruce's level, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think you would have had a really decent film there. And the other side of that is because it felt like Bruce Willis was playing it down a little bit, I didn't like Jimmy as a character.
Okay.
So as in, what I mean is Bruce Willis is incredibly cool. The character is incredibly cool. But as a character, I was like, but you've done terrible things and you've not shown me anything in this to sort of redeem you.
Mm.
So I was just like, well, I hope the mob get you because you've killed 19 people or whatever. And so it's not, and I think that's also a little bit of a waste of Bruce Willis's talents because he does do that charming, boyish rogue really, really well. It's like, you know, he's up there with, for me, like Harrison Ford of like leading men who are, you know, handsome and cool and can do that charming rogue type thing, the Han Solo sort of performance. But they don't really, it's almost like he's not giving it, either he's not invested in it or they don't give him enough direction to be like, this is what Jimmy as a character is. So you just got this hitman that's like, why did I give a shit?
Yeah, almost like it should have been that it turns out he didn't actually kill all those people.
Or
the people he killed were real evil bastards.
Yeah, and there's no redemption about like, yeah, there's no redemption with his wife. He wants to kill his wife because there's some sort of agreement where him, Yanni and her get $10 million if the other two die. And it's like, he wants to kill her. And there's never any like redemption of like, oh no, he was doing it to protect her. It's like, no, he was always going to kill her.
Yeah, like he genuinely did. Because they take the piss, don't they? Because he won't get a divorce because it goes against his beliefs or whatever. But then he will happily kill people. So yeah, and I guess if he is, like, he's not the hero, I guess, because Matthew Perry is the hero. But he is made out to be like your men are like him. But yeah. I think you are right in what you said there. There is not enough built around him, I suppose, to make you like him. I liked him because I just thought, like you said, he's cool, calm, and collected. And standing up next to Matthew Perry, I just really liked that sort of balance. But no, I can definitely see what you mean with that.
And it's not even necessarily the criticism of Bruce Willis because...
No,
not
at all. He's doing what he was told to do,
I guess. He's doing what he's told to be doing. I think they needed to go, this is the film you're in. And it's like he thinks he's in one film and other people. And it's almost like, and I know we've mentioned this before, I almost wonder if it's that case of like, you know, they say only certain directors can now get a really good performance out of Robert De Niro or Al Pacino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they walk on set and new directors or less experienced directors go, oh, Robert De Niro,
yeah, like
Al Pacino.
They're starstruck. Yeah.
And like Scorsese's their friend and he's worked with them since before they were famous. So he can go, no, that was shit. They're like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if, this is at the point of Bruce Willis's career where a less experienced director's gone, oh, maybe. John McClane.
He's bigger than the film, like, isn't he?
And no one's gone, Bruce, you need to up the energy, mate.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I think he's either doing what he's doing or he's been doing what he's been told to be doing. But it just feels like he's in a different film. So I think there needed to be some decision made on the direction this was going. But that was it. I suppose that's sort of one extended point from me, really, in terms of how I feel. Because there's other little gaps as well. Like, there's not really an exposition between Jimmy and Oz. So they spend like a day together and then you're like, they're best friends.
Best buddies,
but it doesn't make any sense. But anyway, is there anything else from you that you didn't like? Because I know you do have a bit of affection for this film. And I tried not to go in two-footed. No, I tried not to break the legs of the film, but...
Listen, if you bring some weight to your points, then there is no issue, is there? I think you explained yourself very well. And for a lot part, I can definitely see where you're coming from. And just sort of bouncing off what you said then about some of the little details and stuff, and I think just some of the things that got ignored or rushed or whatever. So one of the plot points is that there's this $10 million in a bank somewhere, and to collect it, Jimmy, Yanni and Cynthia all need to claim it together. Or if one or more of the group dies, the surviving members can withdraw the money if they've got the death certificates for the deceased. So Jimmy kills Yanni Gogolak, and then he fakes his own death. So then Cynthia can go and get the money, right? But wouldn't she surely be suspicious as all hell, right? That Jimmy and Yanni have just died in a burnt out, torched car. And then immediately after, Cynthia is at the bank ready to take the money out. Like, surely she's prime suspect number one. The feds would be on her immediately. This guy who's ratted out, like one of the biggest crime bosses in Chicago, has died, right? They reckon Jimmy Tedeschi's dead. And then Yanni Gogolak, another huge, high profile person, is dead. There's no way they're just letting her walk in that bank with two death certificates for those guys.
And that also probably comes back to what we were saying earlier, which is if it's the caper, screwball, light-hearted comedy, that's the sort of thing where I don't think you question it.
Or throw a funny line in there about something, like maybe the bank teller goes, oh, anyone would think you'd killed these guys. Yeah. Or, you know, like a wink and a nod to the audience or something. But they don't mention it. They don't touch on it. So it just... it looks like a huge gaping hole in the story.
It's almost like, narratively it is. It's like they got an idea and they just didn't flesh it out enough in some senses, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll move on to talking about the critical reception. Now, I've been quite harsh on this film. That doesn't mean it's not underrated, as we've said before. There are things that I've mentioned there. But if it's been absolutely slammed by the critics, perhaps I will say it is underrated. So who knows?
Now
I have not seen the critical reception, Alice. So what do I think?
What
I
do you think? If you were going to throw a guess on it, put a number on it.
You think it's underrated because you've looked at the critical reception, right? And you're quite fond of it.
Mm-hmm. I may be blinded by
nostalgia. So what would I give it? I would probably give it like a... I don't know, like a 4.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, but I think maybe, so yeah, let's say that. Let's say like 4.5.
All right.
And that's why it's underrated, because you think it's perhaps, I don't know, a 6 or 7 or something like that. Like, I don't know. What would you say?
So I would probably, thing is, I had fun watching it.
Yeah.
Like, and there are issues with it. There are holes in the story.
It's not offensive.
And I think, like
you
said, it's a bit muddled and it is a bit mixed up with what it wants to be. But I enjoyed watching it. But I wonder if I just, because I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, if that makes it, like, almost tricks your brain into thinking, oh, yeah, this was good, where maybe it wasn't.
So I suspect the critics weren't kind to it. I can say that. I have a gut feeling the critics weren't kind to it. And I know this because, well, I don't know this for sure, but I think I Googled the sequel, which is the whole 10
yards. I haven't seen that.
And saw it got battered.
Mm.
So I'm wondering if that's because, you know, they felt the bar was low to begin with. The critics, I mean. But then maybe the audience are quite fond of it. Anyway, lay it on me.
Wild that it got a sequel at all, really. But I didn't know there was more of that story to tell.
How successful was it at the box office?
I'll have to watch the next one. So on IMDb at the time of recording, it gets 6.7, which I thought was... that's like pretty generous, really. Over on Rotten Tomatoes, the audience gave it 64% and the critics gave it 43%, which is kind of where you were at with that sort of low four mark.
So thinking of...
So I think the problem is I can see the flaws in it, so I can see what the critics are talking about. The critic consensus was, despite a charming cast, the whole nine yards can't tickle funny bones consistently enough to distract from its sitcom-like story.
That's pretty accurate. Like for me.
Yeah.
What did the critics give it?
43. So I don't know if it is underrated, really. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than a 43. I would probably at least give it a 5 and probably go into... I'd probably give it that high 5, actually, what it averages out at. 6.7 on IMDb, I think, is quite generous.
Yeah, that is quite generous, actually.
I don't know if it is underrated. I think maybe I was wrong on this one.
Are we saying it's overrated?
Not overrated. Maybe appropriately rated. When you sort of balance them all out. I don't know. What are you thinking? What do you think?
Listen... You picked it. You're fonder than me of the film. And I think if that's what you think, let's go with that. It's appropriately rated. But you wanted to watch it again. You still had a good time with it.
I had a good time, you know. And as a revisit, I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah. And I did enjoy it. I enjoyed watching it. This wasn't like All Dogs Go to Heaven, where I was just disappointed the whole way through. Or 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Yeah. Is it a bit of a guilty pleasure then? Is it like, I know this is shit, but actually I like it?
Maybe a little bit. I don't really agree with the term guilty pleasures, Josh, you can love what you love, you man.
Everyone should love anything. But you know what I mean? Is it like I can see the flaws, but I don't really give a shit.
Flaws. It doesn't know what it wants to be, but I still enjoyed the ride.
It's like, I suppose, the way I am. Is it your Green Lantern?
Oh, maybe it is. My Green Lantern. Yeah, yeah. But I would argue that Green Lantern was better. Well, there we go then, the whole nine yards, I guess, tentatively, sort of, into the appropriately rated vault.
It's dusty in there.
It is dusty.
The vault creaks open and in goes the whole nine yards. I can't even remember all the stuff that's in there.
No, oh no, me neither. We'd have to check our spreadsheet about that, Josh, wouldn't we? But there we go. Well, I had a good time. And you know what? I'm glad I got you to watch a film you hadn't seen before. So there's that, isn't there? But anyway, Josh, what are we going to be watching for next week?
Next week, we are going to be watching and talking about...
This is my favourite part of the episode, guys. I love this.
I'm wondering how this is going to go down with you.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Next week, Alice, we're going to be talking about Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Cool, man. Cool.
Yeah, no, it's fair. You can laugh, but we're going to watch it and talk about it. Yeah.
Neutral, deadpan, your poker face. You don't know what I think about any of this.
Join us next week when we're going to be talking about Lara Croft Tomb Raider. Why did I pick it? Tune in next week.
I will tell you.
In the meantime, if you could give us a little rating wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, all the usual places that do reviews, we'd really, really appreciate it. It helps other people find us and all that jazz. If you want to get in touch with us, it's filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. And we're on all the social medias. If you just search for Just Films and That Pod, we're also on the television, Alice.
Oh, we are indeed. So every Friday evening from 6 p.m, we're on the local TV network. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, Liverpool, or the North East of England, you can find us on Channel 7 on Freeview. Or if you live in North Wales or South Wales, you can find us on Channel 8 on Freeview. Or if you have Sky and you live anywhere in the UK, you can find us on Channel 195. That's every Friday from 6 p.m.
Lots of places to hear us talking about underrated, underseen films. And again, if you've got
and
a suggestion...
appropriately rated.
And appropriately rated films like the whole nine yards.
Yes.
If you've got a film you want us to talk about, get in touch. However, next week we'll be talking about Lara Croft Tomb Raider. I can't wait, Alice.
Neither can I. For what reason? Who knows?
Anyway, thank you very much for listening. It's goodbye from me. Cheerio.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.